You're connected to NPR's All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan, our annual fall look-ahead show, where we ask the musical question, do you need this? When, in fact, you have this. Joining me to talk about the Stones, clones, and this fall's CDs, the new ones, in New York City, we have Will Hermes. He's a senior contributor to Spin magazine. Meredith Oakes, a DJ for Sirius Satellite Radio's Outlaw Country Channel. In Philadelphia, writer Tom Moon. He writes for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he's sitting at member station WHYY. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
And hello, Meredith.
Hi.
And Will. How y'all doing?
Hello, Bob.
We're great.
Great.
Good. So the first group we heard was Marah. Meredith Oakes, who's Marah?
This is a band from South Philly, from Tom's neck of the woods, that were supposed to be like the next big alt-country thing, the next alt-country Nirvana. They never were,
roots
obviously.
Rock.
Nobody was. They sound a lot like Springsteen. In fact, Springsteen did a cameo on their last album.
And Nick Hornby wrote a lot about
Nick
them.
Hornby's
he
obsessed championed with them.
That's right, to the point where anything they do now is sort of has a question mark on it because, you know, Nick is such an influence on their career at this point.
Yeah, the author of High Fidelity and former pop critic for The New Yorker, for people who don't know who Nick Hornby is.
Well, I think he saw, as a lot of people saw them, as this kind of, this band with this rough and tumble street kid image, sounded like early Springsteen, acted like Ray and Dave Davies, the brothers Bianco, that's who they are, Serge and Dave Bianco,
crazy
beat the crap
brothers
out of each other on stage and, you know, go
a great
through
tradition,
a revolving cast of characters. And this record, I guess, is a return to form because their last one was this big, noisy, messy rock album that was just not very good. And this new one, which is called, and this is a great summation of their career, If You Didn't Laugh, You'd Cry. That's the title of the new album. And it's great. It's just a great classic rock and roll album.
Let's listen to a little bit more of Marah. And what song do you want to hear?
Let's play number two, The Hustle.
Okay.
Burn up the morning smile with heat that's blazing from my rush. I'm panting for this flash of light I have become. I can't just hold my breath and stop a pulse I'm not controlling. Hit the pavement as the hustle wakes into a run. Here in the hustle now, there's violence in its techno heart. Bleeding our brothers, lovers, others into faded scars. Could not believe it now, the gears are turning down beneath us. She used my blurred dawn to mind the gold is underneath.
So, you mentioned Springsteen, but I can't help but hear the Rolling Stones here.
Definitely. Stones, a little bit of Arthur Lee and Love, some early Replacements, even a little bit of Dylan. I think they've absorbed this kind of music the way the White Stripes absorbed the blues, and that's why they do such a great job with these 3 minute or less songs.
And the new Rolling Stones record's out. Tom Moon, you've written about it.
There's a song on it called Laugh, I Nearly Died, which when I saw the title of the Marah record, I just had to crack up. And that song actually has probably the most energized, engaged Mick Jagger vocal performance since like the Some Girls era. It's really something.
What do you think of the record as a whole?
I think it really hangs together. It's a rock and roll record. It's finally the Stones not trying to reinvent the wheel or put a lot of goop on what are very simple songs. I mean, they're doing what they did back in the 70s in terms of how they're structuring their songs, how unproduced they sometimes are, and it really benefits. I mean, this record breathes. It's got a lot of energy. There's a lot of fire in it.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the new record. What cut should we listen to?
I think we should hear Laugh, I Nearly Died.
Okay.
I'm so sick and tired.
Sounds pretty good.
He's tearing it up.
Yeah.
He cares about something again, I guess. I don't know.
What could that be?
Would you want to put this record on when you want to go listen to a Stones record?
Boy, is that the acid test, isn't it? I don't know. I mean, I haven't had enough distance from it. I think it takes a while to let it sink in and see how it exists. But it is certainly characteristic Stones, which I don't think you could say of Voodoo Lounge or whatever the one before that was.
You know, I look back in the discography of the Stones in the past 30 years from about, well, let's see, even 33 years, even from like 1972 to now. None of those records, when I want to say I'd like to listen to the Rolling Stones, none of those records do I ever want to put on. Anybody else feel that way? Is there something?
Oh, come on, some girls.
I couldn't agree more, really. You know, I heard some critic say about this new album, it's the best Stones record since Steel Wheels. And, okay. You know, and that's great, I guess. Yeah. I mean, you know, okay. Steel Wheels had its moments. I was glad they busted out the Moroccan musicians on a couple of tracks, but still, if you're going to go back, it's probably going to be Exile and Before.
Well, somebody who was influenced by Exile on Main Street has a new record, Liz Phair. Who's heard the Liz Phair record?
That was a good segue.
Yeah, smooth, Bob. Yeah.
Well,
this is not that record.
No, but I've been rooting for her. I mean, Liz Phair, for people who don't know, came out with a record a while ago called Exile in Guyville, and it was a real shocking record. It was the voice of this suburban girl recording stuff basically on a four-track recorder. It was a very low-fidelity recording. In fact, most of the songs on it were originally released as these little cassette tapes called the Girly Sounds tapes.
Which were pretty awful.
They were pretty awful, but the songwriting was, I thought, pretty remarkable. And she was, you know, being kind of sick of being dumped on by guys in the indie rock scene, wrote what it was allegedly, although I don't quite get it, a song-by-song rebuttal or reply to Exile on Main Street from the point of view of a girl who was talking very frankly about sex and the way it functioned in relationships and other stuff too. And she became a hero among everybody who was an indie rock fan. And she came out with a couple of records after that, which were not quite as good, maybe trying to like be a little bit slicker. And she disappeared for a while. And a couple of years ago, she came out with a record on Capitol, on a major label, that hooked her up. She decided that she wanted to work with the producers of Avril Lavigne and some other very commercial-sounding producers to make a very commercial radio pop record. And a lot of old fans were appalled at this.
What'd you think?
Was, as well they should have been. It was a mess.
It was horrible.
It was kind of horrible, although because
a couple
it was
of great songs.
I mean, she was trying to do something that she couldn't quite pull off, but there was an element of subversion to it, which I think some people, myself included, got enough to appreciate what she was trying to do. And then we were sitting back and basically saying, well, okay, let's hear the next record. The next record is here, and she hasn't completely abandoned this quest to be the alt-rock Sheryl Crow.
The record's called what?
The record is called Somebody's Miracle, and it sort of splits the difference between the old Liz Phair and this kind of mature suburban mom.
Soccer mom. She's soccer a soccer mom.
Mom. Identity that, you know, she was trying to turn into commercial pop music on the last record. And the one song I want to listen to, besides sounding a whole lot like the Stones, is a remake of a song from the Girly Sounds.
Let's listen to something from Somebody's Miracle. Comes out October 4th from Liz Phair, and we're going to listen to
Can't Get Out of What I'm Into.
It's a steady job, and it's the only thing that makes me move.
Sounds like very familiar music to me. Do you think anybody 20 years old is going to listen to Liz Phair?
Probably not.
I don't know. I don't think so. I went to see her perform, and I saw a line of 20-year-olds from Long Island and Queens and Brooklyn around the block at the Hammerstein Ballroom. But I think they were all there to see John Mayer, who's the headliner.
Obviously. Oh. The people who go see Liz Phair are guys in their 30s and 40s who thought that she was actually talking to them when she made Exile on the God Hill. Being ironic about gender stuff, you know. That she was being literal, which she was not.
I have some women friends who are rooting for them. You're not among them.
Let's do something completely different from Rolling Stones sounding things. And the closest thing I can think of, an album comes out on the 13th of September called Cripple Crow by Devendra Banhart.
Yeah.
Will Hermes, again, who's tell us about Devendra Banhart, the San Francisco singer?
San Francisco,
Venezuela,
via all over the place. He's been living in France.
This is all new
lately.
Material.
It's all new material, and he became known as kind of this faux primitive folky who had a very unusual voice, which drove some people crazy and endeared him to others. And he's put out a number of records that have been pretty much his voice, acoustic guitar, and very surreal lyrics. This record is the most fully arranged.
I hear drums on it. And
they're drums.
Real
and
studio.
Electric guitars. And,
I shouldn't
it
say
sort
that.
Of sounds. Yeah, I think he's he's learning about playing with an ensemble, and it's I think it's his best record and most interesting record by far. A lot of songs in Spanish. He is part Venezuelan, and I think grew up in Venezuela part of his childhood. And some of it recalls Brazilian Tropicália music. In fact, of the '60s, it sounds like he was listening to some old Caetano Veloso records.
While somebody else in the other room was listening to Donovan, I think.
Yes, Donovan also seems to figure in his hierarchy of influences.
I haven't heard enough of this record yet, so let's listen to something from Cripple Crow. What should we listen to, Will?
Let's hear track 4. It's called "Long Haired Child,"
great.
Which he is.
Midwinter's day, it's cold, and I know for certain when I go outside, my head will start hurting. It's a winter's day, and I know for certain when I go outside, my head will start hurting. So I wrap it up in materials, keep my hair from getting cold. I'll wrap it up in materials to keep my hair from getting cold. And I said, tell my friends when I have kids. Yeah, I said, tell my friends when I have kids. I'm gonna want the child to be a long-haired child.
Devendra Banhart. The record's called Cripple Crow. It's out September 13th. Is it a record from beginning to end you could sit down and just listen to? One of the things I liked about his other stuff was when I found it interspersed randomly in my music listening, as opposed to album from beginning to end.
I think this one does hold up beginning to end because he varies it a bit. His earlier records, when it was just him and acoustic guitar, it got a little samey after a while. But this... he's changing languages, changing arrangements, and it's good stuff.
There's a beautiful artist, and I happened to listen to these back-to-back earlier in the week. Maybe there's no relationship at all between the two of them in terms of location and the way they approach music, but there was something so gentle about the way Jose Gonzalez, a new CD called Veneer, approaches music, and the way Devendra did. Tom Moon, what do you know about Jose Gonzalez?
Yeah, I think you're right. There's an awful lot of overlap between a lot of these guys now. Sufjan Stevens, the great sort of state-by-state project that he's on, has the same sensibility a little bit.
M. Ward sometimes, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely M. Ward. And a lot of these guys aren't necessarily coming out of the same pool of influences. I mean, Jose Gonzalez has been compared in almost every review I've read to Nick Drake.
And he sounds a lot like Nick Drake.
Yeah, and that's not true of Devendra, who seems to have a broader range of interest as a vocalist. But Jose is similarly like a sort of global citizen right now. He lives in Sweden in a town called Gothenburg, but his parents are Argentinian. And he's sort of assimilated this sort of very tender way of singing that comes out of Nick Drake, and you could even hear Edith Piaf in that.
Let's listen to some of it. What should we play?
Let's hear a song called Romaine.
Washed away by the rain, we will stand upright as we stand today. We'll remain after everything's been washed away by the rain. We will stand upright as we stand today.
That feeling of the record stays for most of the record, Tom.
Yeah, that's right. It's really there.
An
interesting thing about him as a vocalist is I get the feeling he's not a trained singer, and almost this whole record he sings, he double tracks his vocals. So there's like actually he's singing the same thing on two different tracks, and they meld together, and sometimes they don't quite align perfectly, and that's beautiful too.
A while back on All Songs Considered, we brought into the studio an artist who I have just been in love with for his last few records. His name's Dave Dondero, and he did a song for us. It just bowled me over. It's called South of the South. That studio performance is on our website. His new record comes out October 25th. Meredith Oakes, tell us about Dave Dondero.
Well, he's this guy that a lot of tragedy has befallen. His girlfriend died in a fire. His parents divorced when he was little. I mean, he's been through all this stuff, and he writes very dark, sort of depressing stuff. He's a little bit like Townes Van Zandt with slightly less boozing and more emo, you know?
Now I met him. I didn't know this part of the backstory of him. And he was just this sweet, wonderful, gentle guy who sang these incredibly biting and funny lyrics. Incredibly shy. Wow.
Yeah, he's a really good lyricist.
I think it's worth noting about David that if you speak to Conor Oberst, the guy otherwise known as Bright Eyes, he will cite David as a huge influence on him. David used to have a kind of a punk rock band that Conor was big into when he was younger.
They're called Sundial or something like that? Sunbrain.
Yes, Sunbrain.
Well, I've never figured out why. I always thought Dondero was the obvious one to come before or right after, and that hasn't seemed to happen. I didn't know
he's a bit older.
That influence.
He's in his 30s, you know, well into his 30s. Uh-huh.
And his lyrics are so mythic that they may may not quite penetrate the Connor sphere.
Let's listen to a cutoff of South of the South. Comes out October 25th, David Dondero.
It was just a tender chicken in the Florida rotisserie. My own sweat's basting me. Thunderstorms are chasing me. I bit into a lightning bolt. My own tongue began to smoke. I woke up with an empty mouth. Watch the watch tick backwards. South of the South. The CSX vibrates the tracks. Mighty roar, it shakes the shacks. Purple skies and orange moons. Plants are confident in June. Humidity, it's thick. You can cut it with a knife. If you like to take a breath here, honey, I'm gonna cut you out a slice. So I developed gills and I moved into the aquifer. Fell asleep in Wakulla Springs. Woke up down in Jupiter. Then I moved back to the land. High into an orange tree. It was set for life with citrus. But my body couldn't take this. Acidity.
David Dondero, South of the South. Record comes out October 25th, 2005. And I haven't heard the whole thing. I can't wait because I just love his stuff. On my way in today, I listened to a new record by My Morning Jacket.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah, it's a tremendous record. Another pal of Conor Oberst, the singer Jim James, did a tour with him and M. Ward last year. He's absorbed some of the Conor songwriting discipline. These songs, unlike the last record, which was quite a breakthrough for My Morning Jacket, called It Still Moves, the songs on that record were very mythic and long and epic kind of sounding, and these are much more disciplined.
And he's singing. He's using a falsetto voice, which I didn't hear on any of his previous records, which is pretty impressive, too.
That falsetto reminded me a bit somehow of Roger Daltrey. And there was stuff on this record. I'm sorry if no one else. I can't see faces, so I don't know what you guys thought of when I said that. But there was moments in this record where I kept thinking of the parts in Who's Next that build up and build up, just the sort of quieter parts that I felt happened on this record. And I'd like to play a cut called Gideon. The record's called Z. Comes out October 4th from My Morning Jacket. See if that clicks with anybody else. What do you think?
It comes from playing live. These guys have been working so hard the last few years. They played a lot of gigs and done a lot of different kinds of touring in all kinds of settings. And you really feel like they know how to bring something across now. And Jim James just doesn't miss. His vocals are, I think, just tremendous, like transcendent sound of his voice. And he's really figured out how to use it, even though I'm sure people will gripe that there's too much reverb.
He loves the reverb. He talks about how he always used to rehearse his singing in a grain silo.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Everybody's got our own grain silo.
You just go into the bathroom. It's the same thing.
I know. Grain silos give you a great echo, though.
Is that a euphemism? I'm going to the grain silo.
It's like the woodshed.
But I do hear, I hear the Roger Daltrey on that, especially with the reverb.
Well, they're coming to this town October 10th. I hope to get to see them.
Excellent. Yeah, live they are great too. They do jam, and they like to wave their hair around.
They're very furry, aren't they?
They are.
Something wonderful happened in 1957 and was recently uncovered by the Library of Congress. Has anyone heard the John Coltrane Thelonious Monk record yet?
Yes, I have. It's unbelievable.
It is just fantastic. These are tapes that, you can tell the story.
It was recorded in 1957 in November, and it was a benefit concert hosted by Willis Conover of the Voice of America. The tapes were shelved, never released. This culminated about 8 months where John Coltrane was playing with Thelonious Monk's group. And that was one of the more under-recorded groups in jazz at the time. Musicians were raving about this group, but they were not in the studio a lot. They were playing a lot of clubs. And the surviving tapes until this were of intermittently good quality and tending towards bad quality. And this is a beautiful, pristine recording, and it just everyone's playing is on fire. You know, there's very few jazz records anymore where you go, this is really an event, and this is an event.
This was captured a performance. It was at a peak of their playing together.
Yeah.
And the engineer for Voice of America who came up from Washington to record it in New York City, they didn't stick to overhead mics as they often would to record these things. This guy knew what he was doing, and so you get this close mic sound of the piano, close mic sound on John Coltrane's saxophone. The CD's called At Carnegie Hall, and it comes out September 27th. Let's hear a bit of it. We're doing an interview with Larry Applebaum. If you want to know the whole story of these recordings and how he discovered them recently and surprised the heck out of him at the Library of Congress, it'll be on All Things Considered right around the release date of the record on September 27th. So that's something to listen to. Let's go out on this John Coltrane. There's so many more releases. Anybody, just names of CDs they've heard that we should be listening for in the upcoming months that we didn't get to?
Gretchen Wilson.
Jamie Cullum.
There's a new Kate Bush record. After 13 years, she's putting out a two-CD set, which is due November 15th,
9,
I think.
Yeah. Nellie McKay.
Well, that actually doesn't come out until December, so maybe we'll do it in the next roundtable.
In the winter look ahead.
Yeah, December 27th, my birthday. I'm very excited.
We'll have a birthday party for Will and Nellie McKay.
A Paul McCartney record that I'm the only one probably who likes, with Radiohead producer Nigel Godrich.
Oh,
the commercial? Isn't it on the commercial already?
Yeah, the New York Times gave it a great review. John Perales loved it. And I have a new Trey Anastasio solo record, in fact, in my hand as well, which is pretty interesting. Actually, sounds a little Radioheadish and Coldplayish at points, too.
And a new Ryan
Strangely.
Adams.
Another new Ryan Adams.
The second of three for this year for Ryan.
Well, at least like Michelle Schacht, he didn't put them out in 1 week, though.
Sinead O'Connor.
It's kind of a Sinead O'Connor doing dub reggae.
That's a very interesting record.
So good.
A new band from the UK called The Magic Numbers that I think are tremendous. Really interesting record.
Brothers and sisters, right?
That's right. Yeah, family band.
Well, all of the songs that we played, we'll try to put full versions up on the website. So come there. Send us an email. Let us know what you think of the show. So I want to just thank Will Hermes and Meredith Oakes in New York City. Tom Moon.
Thanks, Bob.
In Philadelphia. Thanks, Bob. You're welcome. It's been great. And let's go out on John Coltrane from NPR Music. This is All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. And let's listen to John Coltrane and Thelonious Monk. The quartet includes the drummer is...
Shadow Wilson on drums.
Thank you, Tom Moon. Shadow Wilson's on drums. And the song will
Jess
play...
Knob.
Well, the reason I mentioned Shadow Wilson is because Thelonious Monk's son was really in love with Shadow. He's a drummer and is in love with Shadow Wilson. And these are the best recordings because the way the engineer did them, these are the best recordings of Shadow Wilson that he's heard. So I've got to mention Shadow Wilson. So let's listen to the song Evidence.